You're breaking down my health, girl. Can't eat and I can't sleep.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and that's Too Weak to Fight. Clarence Carter, born on this day in Montgomery, Alabama, 1936. Too Weak to Fight. Folks out in Ohio weren't too weak to fight when they won that game, were they? So, speaking of which, we're talking about sports here in the next part of this program with our guest. That was the laugh of Milton Kent. Milton Kent, of course, lecturer here in the Department of Multimedia Journalism at the University at the School of Global Journalism and Communication at Morgan State University, and a noted longtime sports writer. Cyrita Hubbard joins us by phone, publisher of the blogs GridironGal.com and the NFLChick.com. Cyrita, good to have you back.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Sorry, not in person. At least you're on the phone.
Yeah.
Dean Bartoli-Smith is with us, author of Never Easy, Never Pretty, A Fan, A City, A Championship Season, and writes about sports for the Baltimore Brew, among other publications. Dean, good to have you all back.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And you all can join us at 410-319-8888. You can talk to us here, but write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888 is the number to call. So I started off with this thing in Ohio. It's interesting watching that riot that took place in Ohio after the Ohio-Oregon game. I was rooting for the Ducks. They didn't win. I didn't figure they would, but I was hoping that they might kind of do something. But the riots themselves speak to something, I think, Milton. How did it speak to you?
Spoke to me about selective. What's not that arrogance is the word, but our selective. Sense of outrage, You know, 4 months ago, a group of folks, rioted or protested, and they were called thugs. And a couple nights ago, a group of clean-cut folks rioted and burned stuff up and tore stuff down, and they were called revelers.
Revelers.
So, yeah, I mean, you couldn't help but note that. And I've never understood the connection of we just won something, let's blow stuff up. that connection has never quite worked for me. But it always happens. It always happens.
Right.
Folks have noted, some of my friends are on Facebook, down at College Park when the men's team won in 2002.
Exactly.
And even in 2006 when the women's team won, which really surprised me. They win a championship, and all of a sudden, Route 1 becomes like a maelstrom. I don't get that. I've never understood that. And folks can sort of make the discussion about the differences between Ferguson and Columbus.
And Columbus, yeah. Cyrita, and then we'll go over to Dean.
I mean, he pretty much said everything that I was thinking at this point. You know, it's funny to me how we pick and choose what we want to condemn. And, this isn't the first time we've heard the situation. And speaking of Maryland, I think the last time that they beat Duke, they did the same thing. And that wasn't even a huge game in terms of, a tournament, but it was Duke, so they felt like they wanted to riot. And so now all of a sudden, it goes from you're burning down your communities when it comes to Ferguson, but they were doing the exact same thing, and we just let it slide. And I tweeted that yesterday on my Twitter page. So we just going to let those 89 fires that burned yesterday slide under the rug, huh? And nobody had an answer for me because I'm curious to know why is it okay for sports fans that absolutely has nothing to do with how we live and how we treat each other, burn things down. But people that want civil justice we're calling them all kinds of names under the sun when they want to be heard. It's just weird to me.
Yeah, I was struck especially by the use of different types of language and revelry versus rioting. And I don't think, if there are 89 fires somewhere, that's a pretty serious situation.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What I do know about the fan base of Ohio State is that even thousands, tens of thousands of folks travel to the cities and don't have tickets and stand outside and are there following that team. But I don't understand what the impulse is to, to destroy things after you've probably waited several years to be a national champion or have the privilege of having that honor. That seems to be something you'd be very happy about and not necessarily but I think, wherever there's alcohol, there's going to be these kinds of situations. I mean, a number of things that we're talking about today have to do with that.
So I want to get into very quickly here what happened. Your analysis of what happened on Sunday to the Ravens, and why they tanked before we get into the very serious thing of the NFL's report on Rice. But I mean, there were two very specific plays where I saw them kind of fall through the floor here. But what are your thoughts?
So to me, you know, we've been talking about our secondary all year, and you have a guy. Darrell Harmon coming to make a play on the ball that Joe Flacco threw, which was a little bit inside where he normally throws that pass. He usually puts it in the corner of the end zone. He was throwing to Torrey Smith. And they had the help in the secondary from the safety to make that interception. That's not something we had on that same play that Brady threw. And I think it just comes down to a few skill positions, us not having that talent. And, I think we got really far with what we had this year, and that team needed to that playoff experience. But if you look at Brady's pass to Brandon LaFell and Flacco's somewhat wobbly pass to Torrey Smith that was a little bit off the mark, and there's a big difference there.
Sarita?
I agree with that. I think that this team was very resilient, and I think that going into the playoffs, we really didn't know what we were going to expect because the same secondary, actually not the same secondary, because there were even more guys that were not in the second Pittsburgh game in which they put up 44 points. There were some new guys that played, and I think that we really thought that could possibly be a repeat, whether Le'Veon Bell was there or not. And then they overcame that, and then they went to New England, and they gave up two 14-point leads. And so I'm not mad at that, the fact that people like to bring up what Flacco did or didn't do, but I think that, you know, when you have a team that is able to establish two leads, two good leads, and your defense can't allow, you know, they can't allow those types of plays. And there were some drop balls that didn't go the Ravens' way. The last score that they had was a field goal, should have been a touchdown. Owen Daniels should have caught that ball, and it would have been a tie score, and then all they would have needed was a field goal. So it was just a couple of plays that didn't bounce the Ravens' way, and then the secondary that has really been decimated by injuries was the end result, and, you know, not winning.
You know, one of the things that has concerned me about this club for 10 years, going back to when Brian Billick was coach, this is not a particularly smart team. They tend to do they play from a sense of emotion, and while that's a great thing to have, there are instances where, and you can point to specific moments where. You know, go back to the San Diego game. You know, Elvis Dumervil had a great year. Drew three offsides penalties for lining up in the neutral zone three times. Now, if I'm coaching 7- and 8-year-olds, you know, the 7-year-old, the first time he does that, I tell him, okay, I pull him over and I go, all right, we don't line up there. The second time, I really get the message across, but I shouldn't have to tell him a third time. This guy is a multiple-time All-Pro. He should know that you don't line up in the neutral zone three times. And it's examples of that. And I want to real quickly. I don't want to blame. I've evolved in my thinking. You know, you get older, you evolve in your thinking. And I've evolved to some degree about Joe Flacco. I've evolved to the point where I'm at least willing to call him a good quarterback, occasionally a very good quarterback. But there's a difference. There's a reason that Tom Brady's going to the Hall of Fame. And Joe Flacco was not. And you could see that in the fourth quarter. You could see on the interception. You know, he had a guy open in the flat on that play. And instead, he tried
open
to make
all the time,
he tried to go to the hero play. He tried to go for Torrey Smith, who wasn't open. Clearly wasn't open. And it's that kind of thing. Flacco has a tendency for all the, you know, he's had that great run for like seven, you know, where he hadn't thrown an interception. But I kept thinking in the back of my mind, it's coming. I just don't know when, but it's coming. And it did.
One of the things also struck me, I think I had this right. This was at least two games in a row where they had this penalty for having too many men on the field. I couldn't believe it. Again?
Harbaugh drawing the 15-yard penalty for the unsportsmanlike conduct. I understand. I mean, after the fact, you understand the point he was trying to make about the substitution thing. But it's still something you can't take 15-yard penalties in the fourth quarter of a game. You just can't.
And when you talk about the emotionality, what Harbaugh did is emblematic of the emotionality of the team you're talking about because he's the leader of the team. And he presents that emotionality. It kind of goes through the.
I actually love that about Harbaugh. That he's,
I do too.
He's on the sideline and he's human just like the rest of us, and he's passionate and intense. And that's the best New England team that we've seen in 7 years. And that we're on the cusp of beating that team is a tremendous accomplishment, given where we came from, which was 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter against Cleveland when we didn't have the lead. And, and are we going to the playoffs or not? You know, Flacco went on a run from there, and at the end of that run was that pass. And I agree, maybe at some point, I don't know whether they're smart or not, but a couple of instances they outsmarted themselves, where you have 1:46 left and you're throwing that pass at that point. If you get the touchdown, Brady has the chance.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like he was breaking a press on that previous drive. I mean, he was just driving the ball down the field. And so I think if they hit it, then they look like geniuses. But I also thought, what about Justin Forsett in the flat and go there? But
what are you going to say, Sarita? Then we're going to throw something else out here at you all.
I understand why we're harping on that play, but also we have to realize that those plays that he's done in the past and he's made those same similar decisions have been beneficial. And I want to point to on the Super Bowl when he checked out of a run play on third down and threw the ball to Anquan Boldin for a first down. That was a key first down and really ultimately sealed the victory. So. Was it a play that I wish he could have taken back? Yeah, I think that he probably does too. But I completely agree with Dean to the point where I'm not sure why we went for the house money with so much time left. But I really don't like being so critical to a guy who most times it works in his favor and he's done those types of things that ultimately has helped him win games.
Yeah. So I want to ask another thing that I was really concerned and thinking about a lot, and that was actually a really interesting letter to the editor in this morning's Sun about from Mary Lou Yam, who is the president of Notre Dame, about the NFL could have become a leader in domestic violence prevention. I was thinking about the report that came out about Ray Rice and literally how the National Football League blew it by not looking even after they got the tapes. Even after they got the report from their own investigative team made up of former policemen to say, I've never heard of a casino that doesn't have a video camera inside, and that the Ravens knew they had a video camera inside and knew about that tape, that nothing was done. I think this is a pretty damning report, not just about the Ravens, but about football in general and when it comes to domestic violence. What are your thoughts on this, folks?
I think... the culture in and of itself is it's very much a front-running culture. So you've got – I mean, you hit on it, Milton. I mean, football, to expect any kind of nuance or intelligence or deep, something that – a report that we could be proud of that would help do that, these guys are all validating each other. Roger Goodell is meant to protect a brand.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Rice gave no indication that this was a part of his past, and I haven't. And I think probably if it was, we would have heard about that by now, because in today's society, we hear about everything. And I think everyone was inclined to say, "I don't want to get, I'm going to take it at face value that these things and not go any further." I just see it because, I was at John Mackey's funeral, and Roger Goodell got up there and said, "I grew up in the D.C. area, and I was a Colts fan." Because they were winning. And that gave me an insight into Roger Goodell that, you know what, he's not even going to follow his home team even if they're losing, and he's going to jump on the bandwagon. And that immediately at that moment, I thought, he's going to move where the tide moves. And that report might be more tragic than even what happened, because think about all the other stuff. Now, we got to see intimately what happened there, but think about all the other stuff that's gone on, not only in the NFL, but on college campuses as well. That's
all right.
Been brushed
what happened in Florida with this kind of stupid kangaroo court that exonerated somebody from all the evidence looked like committed a rape, which because he's a star quarterback, he walks. This is a serious issue that I think football is afraid to put its hand around.
I agree, but at this point they have to because it became a domino effect. After Ray Rice, you had Ray McDonald, and you had Greg Hardy, who's still not on the team. And I think McDonald got released as well. So, you know, you have to deal with this, and you have to deal with it forefront because it's a violent sport, and we know that. And the assumption can be, whether it be right or wrong, is that the nature of that sport can carry over into their personal lives. And while we don't know whether Ray Rice has ever, you know, committed such an act before because the records really don't indicate that, it doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. So if I'm the NFL, I absolutely want to be, you know, the trailblazer in connecting with domestic violence and at least trying to right some wrongs here. I think that the report, I don't even want to get into that report because it's a biased report. The guy that they got to do it has ties with the NFL. But at the end of the day, they could really use that, and they're creating thresholds now with how to penalize guys, which in the past they never did because it's not in the CBA. It was all a judgment call. So now they've taken strides into, you know, first, I believe it's the first time offender, six games, and then there's a ban afterwards. So at least it's making them accountable for their actions, where in the past it's done nothing but been swept under the rug.
I agree with every single word that's been said over the last few minutes about this subject, and yet not a darn thing's going to happen out of this.
Nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen for the very reason that we, the American public, wants football.
Yeah.
Yep.
The fact of the matter, look at the numbers. All you have to do is just look at the numbers over the last week or so. As it gets colder, people go indoors. We get playoff football. The college football numbers from the other night, huge.
Yep.
ESPN broke the last three telecasts, the bowl games on January 1st, and then Monday night's game broke records, not just for like college football viewing, but for audiences who watch ESPN, period. I guarantee you this Sunday, the championship game, these two games that are going to be played Sunday, are going to set all kinds of numbers, and the Super Bowl will be watched by larger numbers than last year's. The other day, you know, Saturday afternoon during the Ravens game, there was a picture of Roger Goodell, and there in the house organs, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. It was almost as if they were reading from a script about how for Chris Collinsworth, the analyst, to say, "Yeah, I never doubted Roger Goodell's, you know, integrity." Well, he must have been out there on what I said, Roger Goodell Island, because everybody else knew that Goodell and the whole system was lying. It was all false. But we want what – I mean, telling you, I mean, the last point, I'm like an hour before the game, I was out at the Best Buy in my neighborhood. There are women walking into the Best Buy, one wearing a Ray Lewis jersey and another woman wearing a Ray Rice jersey. Which tells me that no one cares. No one cares.
Well, it's just two things here. I like football too, and
Are you going to watch the game Sunday?
Yeah, I'll probably watch the game.
I
didn't watch the whole Ohio Oregon game. I watched part of the halftime, and I went to bed. But I just couldn't stay up because I have to get up really early to do the show.
I understand.
So I wasn't going to stay up to watch the game. But I watch it, and I like football, and I know football is a violent sport. It's a tough sport. It's a very macho, masculine game. And I never played football very well. I wasn't very good at it, but I only played the defensive half because I could never catch the ball. But
that's right. But quarterbacks and wide receivers.
That's the difference. But I'm saying this because I did do other sports that people consider violent. I wrestled. You know, I boxed. I did other kind of things that were, you know, these kind of sports that are violent sports. But it doesn't mean just because you're playing a game where you go thud up against another man in the middle of a game that the other thing you do is go thud up against a woman's head.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that to me, there's no. I don't care how many studies make correlations. There's no excuse. And one of the things in that report that Dr. Yam pointed out in her article this morning, which is really interesting, nobody's talking about, is that the Mueller's report urged the NFL to establish specialized teams of experienced domestic violence and sexual assault investigators and victims witness advocates to investigate domestic violence reports. And but nobody's acting on that. Nobody's writing about that, talking about that. But that to me was at the heart of this report. We're saying we can be proactive in the National Football League, in the NCAA, to say this stuff is not acceptable.
Absolutely.
Sure we can. But we won't. I mean, because There's no impetus. If you could point to me, if you seriously, and I'm not trying to poo-poo because you're entirely right, but if you could point to me any sort of empirical evidence that people, I mean, I really thought in September when that video came out, when the second one came out, and you actually saw him, Ray Rice, punch his wife, I was like, this may be it. This may be the moment where there's separation between the disconnect between people wanting their football and saying, I've had enough. And yet, that game, the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game, the next game, broke records for Thursday night viewing. Because people, for all the talk, and that's all it is, Mark, that's all it is. People talk a great game. We're outraged. And yet, on Sunday, what time's the game on?
Without thinking about it.
For the most part, I agree with that. I do think that there's a good mass of people that are feeling some kind of way about it, but they like football, and they don't know how to differentiate the two. And so it's like, this is an unfortunate situation, but I love the sport, and I don't know how to not support it. I mean, how to support it, but not support what happened. You know what I'm saying? And so we're going to watch because we love football, but it doesn't mean that that communicates with being okay with domestic violence. It's just you don't really know how to draw that line. It's kind of black and white in this situation. No, I don't like what happened, and it, you know, he should have gotten, you know, suspended longer or let go like the Ravens did. But at the end of the day, I'm a Packers fan and I love Aaron Rodgers. Just general speaking, not me. I love Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know how can I, you know, not support Aaron Rodgers, but then, you know, not be happy about that. So that's, I think that for the people that I know, I think that that's been their issue, is that they don't really know how to say, well, I want to support my team or my favorite player, but I don't want to support what went down behind closed doors because it's messed up. And I think that that's the issue that people are having right now.
You know, the irony to me is this is also a sport that's found its foundation is on organized crime. I mean, it's on betting. I mean, there's lots of betting, both legal and illegal. Mm-hmm. I think it has raised the awareness, at least amongst the players and the owners, and that you're not going to be waiting for a tape to come out before. You know, the guy was on the practice field, in that first practice, the fans were cheering Ray Rice. You know, that's not going to happen again. At least I hope it doesn't happen again. And, you know, what's disappointing to me is that I still haven't heard anybody say, is their behavior because of head trauma starting to manifest while they're still playing? You know, and that kind of knee-jerk reaction, a violent knee-jerk reaction. If you watched Ray Rice get hit, even in the Minnesota game, in that Blizzard game, where he actually made some yardage on plays in that season, I mean, it sounds like a car wreck on every play. And, you know, 5-6 years of that, does that have an effect on, you know, that's to me another question that sort of gets lost in this, is that why are the incidences of this increasing, across the board?
So, folks, you haven't called in because I have been pushing a call, and I apologize for 410-319-8888 in the few minutes we have left to your thoughts on this. But I want to switch gears just to have a closing thoughts from you guys on the passing of Stuart Scott. And the other one, Mike Mercusi, who most people don't know, who wrote this incredible book of Muhammad Ali and was a very radical sports thinker who Dave Zirin was like Dave Zirin's godfather of and inspiration, passed away too. And he wrote this incredible stuff on Ali and on why, as a Jew, he didn't believe in Zionism and other stuff. He was an interesting sports thinker. But Stuart Scott passed away. What are our thoughts on Stuart Scott?
I think Stuart Scott, to me, introduced a sort of a language, and he sort of opened the door, a language that you hadn't necessarily seen on television, and made it acceptable. And he also opened the door to a group of folks who probably feel marginalized and on the outside. They watch ESPN, they watch these shows, but they never see or hear anyone who talks the way they do, who mm-hmm. brings, who says the things that they say or the things that they hear in their own neighborhoods. And, you know, you can make an argument. There are some folks, I mean, I teach sports writing, and I'm not sure that I would necessarily, I'm not sure that I would teach my kids that, but I appreciate what it brings and what it does, and he will be sorely missed.
Very quick. Go ahead, Cyrene. We have about 2 minutes left. We're here. Go ahead, Cyrene, and then we'll go over to Dale.
For me, Dean. It was definitely somebody that I looked up to, because this is somebody that is, I can relate to him, and then at the same time, he's giving me my sports fix. And when I started blogging, I wanted to make sure that I communicated it the way that I would if I was talking. And I'm, you know, I'm very animated, and I allow my culture to play a role into how I communicate my sports. And I really learned how to do that from Stuart Scott. And his resilience and fighting cancer was huge. So I took this pretty hard when he passed, almost like I knew him. But, I mean, just his fight and what everything that he's done from ESPN to his fight with cancer has just been truly inspirational to me.
Well, you know, when you'd be watching ESPN when he first started, you know, or at any time, you'd just sort of, you know, there was Bob Ley, there were these guys, and Chris Berman was one who immediately kind of jumped out. But when I first saw Stuart Scott, I had to stop and go closer to the television to see what he was saying, because it was hilarious. It was groundbreaking. A player hater, and it would just come out of the normal reporting, and it was like a poetry in that genre that in sportscasting that you weren't used to. But listen to Taylor Swift's song "Shake It Off." Players gonna hate. That goes right to Stuart Scott. He was right. The one that started that.
Yeah,
he was. I'm trying to remember the exact quote he had about the cool side of the pillow.
Cool on the other side of the pillow.
Oh, yeah.
You better slow him down. You better call him Butter, because he's on a roll.
I love that. And I apologize, my listeners, we didn't get to you, but it was my fault for not calling you out earlier to join us in this conversation. But I do want to thank our guest, Milton Kent, who's here in the Department of Multimedia Journalism, the School of Global Journalism and Communication, and also a longtime sports writer who knows a great deal. And it's always great to have him on the show with he brings his sports intellect to the airwaves. Always good to have you here. Same with Dean Bartoli-Smith, author of Never Easy, Never Pretty, A Fan, A City, A Championship Season. Good to have you here, Dean, once again. So, Rita Hubbard, you can read her at gridirongals.com and nflchick.com. And so, Rita, come back soon, and next time, come on in.
Yes, next time I'll be there in person.
Okay, cool. I want to remind you, this Sunday, the Black Talk Exchange Sports Report will be doing live from center stage at 6:30 p.m., in conjunction with the One Night Miami play featuring Jerry Bembry and Ali Danois. So go there, check at weaa.org for more information. And on our way to break, yes, Alan Toussaint. Yes, we can. Born on this day in 1938. We'll be right back to find out what you would do if you were mayor.
We are America now. We are America.